welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark LeVillier, delivering an hour of crime. Later on, we hear Gangbusters from 1948, but right now, Dana Andrews in an episode of I Was a Communist for the FBI. Based on the stories of a real-life spy for the feds, this from August 31st, 1952, called Jump to the Whip.
I Was a Communist for the FBI. Starring Dana Andrews and an exciting tale of danger and espionage. I Was a Communist for the FBI. Many of the incidents in the story you're about to hear are based on the actual records and authentic experiences of Matt Savetic, who for 9 fantastic years lived as a communist for the FBI. Here is our star, Dana Andrews, as Matt Savetic.
There is no peace, there is no security, there is no hope for those who live in the chains of communism. Those misguided fools who, for one reason or another, have chosen to sleep in the red bed don't realize, until too late, that they can know no rest. They are worshippers in a strange religion, a religion in which their savior, the Communist Party, crucifies humanity to save itself.
In a moment, listen to Dana Andrews as Matt Savetic, Undercover Man. Dana Andrews as Matt Savetic, Undercover Man. This story from the confidential file is marked Jump to the Whip.
To most people living in a free country, being awakened at 3 o'clock in the morning by a pounding on the door is merely annoying. Unlike the citizens of Iron Curtain countries, you do not, as yet, live in constant fear of the MVD. But I was a member of the party, a communist for the FBI. And when I was awakened at 3 a.m. by a pounding on my door, I was afraid. Afraid that I'd been found out and that the time had come for me, like others before me, to disappear without a trace. Yeah, coming. I can't find the light. Wait a second. Oh. Comrade Morgan.
Get out of that doorway and let me in.
Oh, sorry.
You kept me out there until I awakened everybody else up in the house. Are you so anxious to be seen going out?
I hadn't intended going out. I was asleep.
Well, wake up and get dressed.
Party business, Comrade Morgan?
MVD.
MVD at 3 o'clock in the morning. I dressed slowly, stalling for time, while I racked my brain for some means of escape. But there was none. I went with Morgan quietly, hopelessly, to meet the men from the MVD. He was waiting for us in Cell Leader Morgan's home, and as the door closed behind us, his opening remarks did nothing toward soothing my jumping nerves.
Is this our man, Comrade Morgan?
Yes, Comrade Carmack.
Good. Bring him in the other room where he can sit down. This may take some time. Sit down. As Comrade Morgan already knows, Comrade Svetik, I arrived in this country this morning to eliminate the traitorous actions of certain party members.
The welfare of the party is my only interest, Comrade.
That makes my mission less difficult. I'm taking you to Chicago within the hour.
Chicago.
A matter of discipline. It was decided to make an example of one man to discourage further crimes against the party. The man chosen is Woodruff Harper.
Woodruff Harper, the Chicago millionaire?
Through fear of the Un-American Activities Committee, he stopped his contributions to the party. Now, He's begging us to save him.
From what?
Criminal charges of arson in connection with the burning of a large, heavily insured tenement building he owns.
How was that arranged?
The two workers who set the fire have confessed to the police that they were hired by Harper to do the job.
Well, that should make an example of Harper, all right.
Precisely.
But I can't see how it'll help the party's treasury.
The party can reward as well as punish, Comrade Svedek. That is why you and I are going to Chicago.
To get the workers out of the jam?
To get Harper out.
When did you say we leave for Chicago, Comrade Cormack?
Immediately.
Well, then I'd better get back to my hotel and pack a bag.
It's too close to train time. We'll be able to buy anything we need after we see Comrade Harper.
And you're not to leave Comrade Cormack's side for an instant, Comrade Svedek. He has no personal knowledge of this country and is to be guarded against unfortunate incidents at all times. I'll drive you to the station.
Despite Morgan's orders against leaving Cormack's side for even an instant, it was vitally necessary for me to contact the FBI before leaving for Chicago. After Morgan had left us at the station, I tried to get away from Cormack, but it was impossible.
Until our train departs, we have only 7 minutes, Comrade Svedek.
7 minutes? Then you better buy our tickets, Comrade Cormack, while I pick up some newspapers and magazines for us to read.
The tickets were purchased earlier.
Oh.
You seem nervous, Comrade Svedek.
Oh, I am. I just thought of something which might destroy my usefulness to the party.
What do you mean?
My landlady. I'm going to have to phone my landlady and tell her that I'm going out of town for a few days on business.
Why? Why should you tell her anything?
She might notify the police that I was missing. We might be picked up.
Why should she even know that you're gone?
Oh, because yesterday was rent day. I came in late, didn't see her, and I didn't pay her. She'll be looking for her money and for me.
Why didn't you tell this to Comrade Morgan? Let him contact her.
Well, I just didn't think of it. I was so impressed by the party's power in this Harper matter that I had no thoughts concerning myself.
I see.
But if I don't call her...
We can take no chances. You will call her, and I will stand outside your booth to make certain that there are no eavesdroppers.
With only minutes till train time, I couldn't stop to argue. While Comrade Cormack stood outside my phone booth to make certain there were no eavesdroppers, I phoned my FBI contact.
Beaker here.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Carlson. This is Mr. Svedek.
I get it.
I missed paying my rent today, and I didn't want you worrying. I'm forced to go out of town for a few days. Very important business.
Where?
Oh, I'm sure I'll enjoy the change. The city's so windy at this time of year.
Windy city, eh? Okay. We'll contact you in Chicago.
Oh, goodbye, Mrs. Carlson. Thanks a million.
Took you long enough to say nothing.
Mrs. Carlton did most of the talking.
No, we'll discuss that later. Now hurry before we miss our train. I wish you hadn't called your landlady, Comrade Svedek.
I had to.
Did you have to tell her that you were going on very important business?
That was the best way to avoid suspicion.
To avoid it?
Americans can forgive anything done in the name of business.
Then they should certainly forgive our visits for the Comrade Harper and Judge Valchek.
How long will we be in Chicago?
Not long. This afternoon, we will call on Comrade Harper and secure a large contribution for the party. Tonight, we will see Judge Valchek and secure his promise to exonerate Comrade Harper.
What happens if the judge refuses to cooperate?
He won't refuse. He can't refuse. That is why it was arranged for Comrade Harper's case to be tried before Judge Valchek, without a jury.
Well, where do I fit in?
As secretary of the Slav Congress, you will be able to arrange a meeting between Judge Valchek and me without arousing the slightest suspicion.
Should I mention that you have recently arrived from Czechoslovakia?
By all means, and that I bring greetings to Judge Valchek from his wife.
His wife is still in Czechoslovakia?
Yes. She returned to settle her mother's estate. It was her presence that gave us the weapon for implementing our plan. In fact, it was her presence there that instigated the entire scheme.
Someone had great foresight.
Thank you, comrade. The hierarchy agrees with you. That is why I was permitted to make this trip.
Congratulations.
After I have successfully completed my mission of disciplining Comrade Harper and shattering the American workers' stupid faith in their judicial system, I will return to Czechoslovakia and join the hierarchy.
What if you fail, Comrade Cormack?
I will not fail, Comrade Svetik. I will die first. And others will die with me.
Is Judge Walchek a party member?
He's a reactionary of the worst sort.
Well, yet you think he will cooperate in exonerating Comrade Harper?
I know he will cooperate, Comrade.
For a moment, hearing Cormack's statement and ghoulish chuckle, I almost forgot that I was an undercover man. I wanted to take his fat, greasy throat in my hands and choke the life out of him. And he seemed to sense my attitude. By the time our train reached Chicago, he was surly and uncommunicative and suspicious of every move I made.
You walk ahead of me, Comrade Svetik. Slowly, so that we do not lose contact.
You're the boss.
I'm glad you understand that.
Meaning what?
It might be unpleasant if you were to forget.
I never forget, comrade. My mind was filled with deep, dark thoughts as I walked the length of the noisy train shed, followed by Comrade Cormack. In fact, I was so preoccupied, I almost missed the message when a man jostled against me and said,
"Take a cab to the Colfax Hotel on North Dearborn Street. The hotel manager will contact you when you're alone."
The man and the message threw me off stride, and I must have hesitated for just a second because Cormack noticed the incident.
What did that man say to you, Comrade Svetik?
What man?
A man who just bumped against you.
Oh, I don't know. Some sort of apology, I guess.
Well, don't let it happen again.
I can't keep people from apologizing for their clumsiness.
You can avoid their clumsiness.
Well, I was thinking of something else.
And apparently you can think of only one thing at a time. Where do we get a cab?
Downstairs.
Lead the way.
That's what I'm doing. Just follow me. We'll stop at the Colfax Hotel.
We'll not. I'll direct the driver after we enter the cab. Reservations have been made by the MVD.
To Dana Andrews, starring as Matt Svetik in I Was a Communist for the FBI, and the second act of our story.
When we got into a cab outside Chicago's LaSalle Street station, and Cormack, the Czechoslovakian MVD man, ordered the driver to take us to the Montfort Hotel on West Roosevelt Road, I knew I had lost my contact with the FBI. At the hotel, we found that reservations had already been made for us, so Cormack and I went directly to our room. After a few hours' rest, we went to see backsliding comrade Woodruff Harper in his loop office.
Oh, go right in, Mr. Svetik. Mr. Harper has been expecting you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Come in, gentlemen. Close the door behind you. Won't you sit down? You've come to help me, haven't you? I'll do anything you want, give you anything you want, within reason.
Reason is an elastic word, comrade.
I will handle this, Comrade Svetik, though you're quite right.
Thanks.
Before we set a price on our help, Comrade Harper, let's first examine what help is needed. You are charged with...
The charges were framed against me, and you know it.
The party exercises discipline in varying ways, Comrade Harper.
Discipline.
Watch yourself, comrade.
I'm sorry.
You are charged with hiring two men to burn a heavily insured tenement building you own.
You know I didn't.
How large a contribution would you make to the party in exchange for complete exoneration?
Any amount, of course.
$100,000?
Certainly. The moment I walk out of that courtroom, a free man.
Would you give $50,000 now as evidence of good faith? It is you who must stand trial, Comrade Harper.
Wait, I have no choice.
You'll give me, us, the $50,000 now?
To whom do I make the check payable?
No check. This must be cash. Dollars.
It will take time to collect that much cash.
How much time?
I might possibly be able to raise it this afternoon.
I'll be back. If you have the money, you will be a free man tomorrow. If you are short $1, you will face the consequences.
With Harper safely on the hook, Cormack's attitude toward me underwent a change for the better. However, when it came time for us to meet Comrade Harper and collect the $50,000, Cormack insisted that I remain in the hotel room.
You have earned this chance to rest, Comrade Svedek.
But you don't know the city, Comrade Cormack. You might get lost.
In a taxi?
Well, you might get robbed. $50,000 is a lot of money.
I will be guarded.
Not if I stay in a hotel room.
Even if you should drop dead. V, you and I have been under the protection of the MVD ever since we arrived in Chicago.
Just when I was rid of Cormack and had a chance to contact the FBI, I learned that both Cormack and I were being shadowed by the MVD. Cormack had left me alone when I was supposed to be with him every second. Perhaps that was to give him an alibi, away from the scene when whatever was to happen to me happened. My tension made me jump almost 3 feet from my chair at a knock on my door. Reluctantly, I crossed the room and opened it.
I wonder if you'd mind turning down your radio. It's awfully loud.
Radio? I don't have a radio turned on.
You mind if I step in while we discuss it?
What? What color is your tie?
Last night it was red.
Come in. I couldn't get away to make a contact. How did you find me?
Find a cab driver who drove you and your friend here from the station? What's the setup?
Woodruff Harper stopped his contribution, so the party framed him on this arson charge as a matter of discipline.
Pretty stiff discipline.
He's paying off, and he'll be freed tomorrow by Judge Joseph Walczyk, whose wife is in Czechoslovakia. Cormack has a recording she made. He's going to play it for Judge Walczyk tonight.
Quite a coincidence, having Harper come up for trial before the only judge whose wife is in red hands, Fetting.
Yeah, that's no coincidence. A party member employed in the courthouse made certain that the case was placed on Walczyk's calendar.
We'll take it off his calendar.
Well, it's condemning Walczyk's wife to death.
Well, what do you suggest?
I don't know. Maybe Walczyk will settle it for us.
I'll turn in your report and get headquarters' reaction. Contact will be made with you just as you leave Judge Walczyk's. Be watching for it.
For an hour after the FBI agent left, I was alone in the hotel room. But much of my nervousness was gone now. Then Cormack returned and I was freed from my vacuum. Cormack was unhappy because he said Harper had been able to raise only $40,000 cash. However, saddest that he was, he brightened considerably when it became time for us to see Judge Walczyk. And when the judge ushered us into his study, Cormack was exerting himself to be charming.
You have a lovely home, Judge Walczyk.
Thank you, Mr. Cormack. It misses my wife's touch.
She is a charming woman.
Did you see her often in Prague, Mr. Cormack?
Just before I left. I saw her almost every day.
Did she say when she was coming home, Mr. Cormack?
Just as soon as possible.
Did she send nothing more definite, no more personal word than that?
Indeed she did, Judge Walczyk. That is why I brought this portable record player. She made a recording she wanted me to play for you, if I may.
Please do, Mr. Cormack. Please do.
The record is on the turntable. She was so happy to make this record. Listen carefully.
This is Mary, Joseph. Your Mary, who loves you so much and wants so to be with you again.
That's my Mary, all right.
It's been so long since you held me in your arms, Joseph. So long since you kissed me goodnight.
Too long, Mary, much too long.
It has been thrilling talking to you, even on a phonograph record, Joseph. Please do anything you can to cooperate with the person who plays this record for you.
Play it again, Mr. Cormack. Please, play it again.
Presently, Judge Valchek. First, I would like your cooperation in a matter very important to me.
Why, anything I can do, Mr. Cormack, I would be most happy.
Dismiss the case against Woodruff Harper.
Dismiss? Mr. Cormack, you must be out of your mind.
Before you come to any decision, Judge Valchek, let me play the other side of the record for you. It also features your wife.
Joseph, it's a month since I asked you to cooperate. Please don't refuse, Joseph. Please don't refuse, Joseph. I can't stand much more of this, Joseph. If you don't agree to cooperate, I'm afraid I'll never see you again.
I ought to kill you. Kill you both.
Don't do anything you'll be sorry for, Judge Walchek.
What would you suggest, Mr. Svetik?
That you do as your wife suggests. Cooperate.
Cooperate? With communists, murderers, blackmailers?
If you ever want to see your wife again, Judge Valchek, you will cooperate.
I can't.
You have no choice. I'll be in your courtroom tomorrow morning, listening for your verdict.
As we walked out of Judge Walchek's house, Cormack laughed. What's so funny?
Oh, that sentimental fool, Valchek. Tomorrow he'll kill the charges against Comrade Harper just to save his wife.
Is that so funny, Comrade Cormack?
It is to me. I watched his wife die just after I had persuaded her to make those recordings. This has been a very rewarding mission.
A very rewarding mission. The phrase didn't make sense. Until I suddenly remembered Cormack's yarn about Harper's giving him only $40,000 instead of $50,000. $10,000 would make this a very rewarding mission. Momentarily, though, I lost interest in that subject when I saw two men waiting for Cormack and me in our cab. Only the FBI and the communist MVD knew that we had gone to Judge Walchek's, and I knew these men were not from the FBI. I decided to do what I could to square things for Judge Walchek's wife. I took a wild guess and silently prayed it would come off. As the cab door opened and the MVD men stepped out toward us, I said, I denounce Comrade Cormack for misappropriations of party funds, comrades.
Thank you, Comrade Svetik. We know all about it.
What are you talking about?
You turned over only $40,000 of the $50,000 Comrade Harper gave you.
He gave me only $40,000.
He says he gave you $50,000.
He lies.
Comrade Cormack lies. I'm making charges against him in my report. In fact, just now he was gloating over the rewards of this mission.
He's lying, comrades, lying.
We believe him, Cormack, because we know that Comrade Harper gave you $50,000.
You? No?
Harper's office is wired. We listened while he counted it out to you. Get in, Cormack. It will be easier if you come quietly.
And me, comrades?
You had better find another cab, Comrade Svetik.
Thanks.
Thank your loyalty to the party, comrade. Had you not denounced Cormack, you would be taking this ride, too.
Immediately after the cab pulled away, my FBI contact appeared. My knees were still shaking as I gave him a full report, including Cormack's account of the death of Judge Walchek's wife. He took it from there and told me about it the next day, just as I was ready to leave for home.
It was a good job, man.
Your boys moved fast.
Fast enough to save Harper's $50,000 from going to work for the commies, but not fast enough to save Cormack.
What happens to Harper?
The case is being continued until we have a confession of perjury from the two goons who set the fire. A confession which will exonerate Harper and convict the party.
Can you get that kind of confession?
They were talking when I left them at headquarters, hoping to cop a plea. I was watching Judge Walchek's face when I told him what happened to his wife. I have no doubt they'll pay the full penalty for their crime.
As I walked toward my train, my mind was preoccupied with thoughts of the complete ruthlessness and the utter disregard of all human values, which were the qualities that attracted official attention to Comrade Cormack. Exerted in the interests of the party, those qualities can lead to a place in the hierarchy. Exerted for personal profit, that can lead only to the unpleasant attentions of the MVD. Up toward the hierarchy or down to the MVD. That's the path the great mass of communists must tread or walk alone. As a communist for the FBI, I chose to walk alone. In this struggle between free men and puppets, the masters of the puppets bar no holds. It is, at the moment, a silent struggle. But don't let the silence fool you. It's a struggle to the death. To protect innocent persons, the names, dates, and places used in this story were fictitious. Next week, we'll bring you another strange adventure based on the fantastic experiences of Matt Svedek. Join us, won't you?
I Was a Communist for the FBI, on Tuned 2 yesterday, starring Dana Andrews, from August 31st, 1952. It was 5 days after that broadcast that Dana Andrews was seen on the silver screen in the motion picture Assignment Paris, directed by Robert Parrish, with Andrews in the role of Jimmy Race in what has been described as an anti-communist film. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. Now on to Gangbusters, from December 18th, 1948, on ABC. It's a broadcast called Appointment with Death.
Gangbusters, presented in cooperation with police and federal law enforcement departments throughout the United States. The only national program that brings you authentic police case histories.
Gangbusters has asked the Honorable Frederick H. Block, Assistant United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York, to narrate tonight's case.
Thank you, and good evening, Gangbusters listeners. Let's start tonight's case in a second-floor room of a dingy rooming house near the bay section of a large eastern city. It was 5 o'clock in the morning, and persistent pounding on the door of Vicki Chester was needed to awaken her. She was by trade a night spot hostess and had retired only an hour before. For a moment, Vicki sat on the edge of the bed. Then, as the door pounding persisted, she slipped on a light negligee and went to the door.
Oh, all right, all right. Take it easy. 5 o'clock in the morning. Oh, who is it?
Come on, let me in.
Who is it?
Don't know me.
Well, then a fine chance you got. I'd think twice before I let in somebody I know. Now it's 5 o'clock. Go on away. I got a lot of sleep to catch up on.
I'm a friend of Pinky.
Oh. Yeah?
That's right. Come on, open up.
Pinky who?
Waldo. Pinky Waldo.
Just a second. Come in.
Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Excuse me for not being more formally dressed.
Don't bother me any.
Company was the last thing I expected at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, Pinky's sort of a magic word around here, huh?
Pinky and I meant a lot to each other. Did you see him in? Were you cellmates or something? How's he look?
I didn't even know Pinky was doing a bit until I tried to look him up tonight.
Oh?
You see, Pinky owes me a lot. He said if I ever got to this burg, it'd pay off. Looks as if I got the town too late.
Yeah, about a year too late. Or about 3 years too early, whichever way you want to look at it. Now, go on. I don't get much sleep as it is.
Did Pinky ever mention Slim to you?
Slim?
Yeah.
You want Slim?
I'm Slim.
Well, sit down, Slim. Make yourself at home. Listen, if it weren't for you, I'd never even have met Pinky. He'd have been stuck away in some can in West Virginia.
It was in Ohio.
Yeah, that's... Say, who told you about me?
I heard about you.
Well, couldn't you wait until noon or sometime? Do you have to go pounding on doors at this hour? And incidentally, how'd you manage to get in the downstairs door? That's always locked.
I managed. Ain't that enough?
Yeah, I guess it is. What'd you want with Pinky?
I'm broke.
Well, don't look at me. I ain't no good for a touch.
No, it's not a touch I'm looking for. I just want somebody with connections to get me a heater.
Oh.
Who do you know?
Listen, Slim. You look like a nice guy, but I don't want to get mixed up in anything.
Well, what are you going to get mixed up in? All I want you to do is to tell me where I can get my hands on a gun, cheap.
Well, I...
Now, look, I'm trying to make enough to get to Arizona. There's a good deal waiting for me there. I had a bundle, but it was chump enough to get in a crap game in Jersey City. Took my last nickel to come here and look up Pinky.
Well, Pinky can't do you no good now, not from where he's sitting.
No, but you can. Come on, now, how about it? Where can I get my hands on a gun?
All right, okay. I work at a joint called The Barrel over on...
Yeah, I know. I was there. It was closed.
Well, they got laws about closing, you know.
What about the heater?
You come around to The Barrel about 10 o'clock tonight. There's a guy I'll introduce you to.
He can take care of me?
If I recommend you, yeah.
Good.
You know, you ain't bad looking, you know.
I don't want to waste any time.
How long are you going to be around here, Slim?
Any longer than I can help it.
Oh, yeah. Arizona.
You're sure that this connection can furnish me a gun?
Relax, Slim. You'll get your heater. Just come around to the joint tonight.
Listen, Vicky, I got no more dough to spend on drinks. Where is this clown?
You're always in a hurry, Slim. Sit still. He'll be here.
You're sure that he can take care of what I want?
You'll get to Arizona. Don't... Uh-huh. Didn't I tell you to have patience? There he is.
Him?
Yeah, him.
He don't look much like an operator.
Well, what do you care how he looks as long as he's got the goods? Wait till I give him the... Oh, he spotted me. Here he comes.
When I give you the high sign, blow.
Listen, you don't have to tell me. I don't want to get involved in any deal.
Hello, Vicky. How goes it? Selling lots of rot gut for the house?
I sell my share. Jack, Slim.
Hi.
Sit down, Jack.
Thanks. My feet are killing me.
Jack.
Yeah?
Slim's a friend of Pinky's.
Ah, you don't say.
I do say.
Well, any friend of Pinky's a friend of mine. Put it there, Slim.
Slim's got some business for you, Jack.
What can I do for you?
Look, boys. You'll excuse me. The boss is getting peed. My sitting at one table so long.
Yeah, go ahead, kid. And thanks.
For what?
For a lot of things.
Okay. I'll float around later.
Nice girl, that Vicky. Sweet as they come.
We could talk about that all night.
Not me. Early to bed, early to rise. It's my motto. What can I do for you, Slim?
I want a heater. Cheap.
Cheap?
You heard me.
What I got was all hard to come by.
Well, what have you got?
Anything you want. I aim to please.
What for around 20 bucks?
20 bucks?
Yeah, that's all I'm going to spend.
Well, I got an old beat-up Colt 38 special. It ain't much good.
I'll take it.
I wouldn't recommend it to my worst enemy.
I said I'll take it.
Okay. The customer is always right.
That's what you always say, huh?
Always. When do you want it?
Right now. Let's go.
You're in an awful hurry, Slim, ain't that right?
Yeah, that's right. Now, where's the gun? Gotta make me some dough beginning tonight.
Why rush? Haste makes waste. Why don't we have a drink on it?
Come on. Let's get the gun.
Okay. You're the doctor.
What do you say we take a turn up 80th, Sarge?
Sure, Ed. Up and back, and we'll call it a night, okay?
Yeah, I got... Hey. Look at that.
Yeah. Kind of late for anyone to be huddled in a doorway.
Let's have a peek at him, eh? Stay here and cover me, Sarge.
Right, Ed.
Hey, buddy. We're police officers, Mr.
That's far enough, copper.
Watch him!
Officer! Halt! Halt!
All right, all right. Take it easy. Yeah, what do you want?
Please, Slim, open up.
Oh. How many times do I have to tell you? 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm asleep
I was in the neighborhood, Vicky.
Well, it's a fine reason.
Well, I'm in a jam. I want to stay here a few hours.
What kind of a jam?
The worst kind. Believe me.
Oh, well, then, look, you better get out of here.
I can't. I can't go out on the street. Not right now.
Now, listen, Slim. Pinky or no Pinky, enough's enough. I don't want trouble.
What kind of trouble can you get keeping me here a few hours?
Well, I don't know. What kind?
What do you say we sit down?
All right. Why not? I, guess you'll be leaving for Arizona a lot quicker now, huh?
What makes you think so?
And you get a gun, you get in trouble. The worst kind of trouble.
Suppose we forget about my trouble.
Okay, Slim. I hate trouble anyway.
Come here, Vicky.
Oh, Slim. Well, well. What do you think Pinky'll have to say about that?
Who cares? Let him say anything he likes.
So, Gangbusters listeners, as police was searching the neighborhood for the killer, the murderer, John Slim Patterson, had found a place to hide for a few hours. As he enjoyed the company of one woman, he had no idea another would be called upon to play an important part in bringing this case to a conclusion.
Now back to Gangbusters. Here again is the narrator of tonight's case, Assistant United States Attorney Frederick H. Block.
As I was saying, the criminal, John Slim Patterson, obtained a gun and used it to murder a detective. As the search began and the alarm spread, Sergeant Earl Howard was standing in the corridor at the hospital where the detective's body was taken. He heard steps approaching and looked up to see Detective Captain Frank Delaney.
Hello, Sergeant.
Captain. He's dead, Captain. He was dead on arrival.
Yes, I heard. What about his family? They've been notified?
Yes, they're all in there.
I'd like to talk to them. Come on.
Helen Branch. She's a policewoman attached to the forgery squad. She's a friend of the family, Captain. She brought them.
Yes, I know her.
Maybe it'd be best if I took you back home. There's nothing you can do here. Oh, excuse me, dear.
Hello, Sergeant. Have you heard? Did they get the killer yet?
No, not yet.
How are you, Captain?
Helen, do you think it'd be all right if I talked with her a minute?
I think so. I think she'd appreciate it.
Suppose we step outside, Helen.
All right, Sergeant. That's an awful thing. For them to wake her in the middle of the night. For them to tell her her husband's dead.
Yes, I can imagine.
Every time he went out on duty, she was afraid it would happen. For years, every day, she was afraid. Now she doesn't have to be afraid anymore.
Look, Helen, when you go back in, would you tell her we're doing everything we can to get the killer?
I wish I could be assigned to it. I wish I could do something.
It's going to be a tough job.
If there's ever anything I can do, call on me. Promise you'll call on me, Sergeant.
All right, Helen. I promise.
Captain Delaney. Oh, yes. What does it look like? Was that so? Come in, Sergeant. That old, huh? Okay, if you run anything else, give me a call.
Hello, Captain.
Sit down, Sergeant.
Thanks.
That was a report of the bullet that killed Ed.
Oh?
It was a .38 caliber slug. Apparently, it came from a Colt Special. 40-year-old Colt Special, at least 40. The grooves run counterclockwise in the slug. Mm-hmm. Haven't made that type of gun in 40 years. What's new with you?
Oh, nothing much. We spent all day shaking down rooming houses in the neighborhood. Not a trace of him.
Well, I imagine he's still in town, Earl. The publicity this thing's getting ought to keep him pretty close to his room. And pretty scared.
Captain, I'd like to try something.
What?
Well, maybe this guy has a room in that neighborhood. Maybe he hasn't. Seems to me more of a cinch that he's been hanging out in one of the joints down there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, suppose I pack a bag and visit a few of them. Suppose I get the word around that I'm a hot customer from Philly.
Maybe you got an idea, Earl.
I don't think there's anything to lose except a little time. And maybe I can make connections that'll lead me to the right guy.
Okay, Earl. Have a try at it.
And like I was saying, boys, what's another drink? You buy me a drink,
hey,
and
Vicky.
I'll be... What?
Telephone.
Oh, okay. Excuse me, will you, fellas?
Yeah, sure. Come on back then.
Oh, hiya, Jack.
Not over here. Sit down, Vicky. Once you meet a guy.
I got a call on the phone right now. I'll be right back.
Good. Don't forget.
Telephone. Some guys ought to know better than call you up during working hours. Hello?
Vicky?
Yeah. Who is this?
Slim.
Slim, I thought you'd be halfway to Arizona by now.
Well, I decided to stick around till things cool off. Look, Vicky, I gotta see you.
Listen, Pinky won't be a friend of yours if he finds out what's been going on.
Forget about Pinky.
Well, look, why don't you drop in here to the joint? Jack's here and...
You think I'm crazy?
All right, all right. I get through here in about another hour or so. How about me dropping around to your place? Where is it?
Never mind.
Well, okay, if that's the way you feel about it, Mr. Slim, goodbye. Fine thing.
Hey, Vicky, come on, I'll buy you a drink.
I'll see you later. Hey, Jack, you know who...
Sit down, Vicky.
Who's your friend here?
This is Earl, Chester Earl.
Glad to see you.
He's hot out of Philly. He's a friend of Big Jake.
Is that so?
Hotter than a $2 pistol.
Listen, I wouldn't go shouting it all over the joint. Now look, Jack, the guys in Philly said you could help me get a room. I can't go lugging the suitcase all over town.
I told you I'll help you get a room. You know of any place, Vicky?
I don't know of any place. Jack, you know who that was on the phone?
Who?
Slim.
Slim? I thought he'd be in Arizona by now.
Well, the operator didn't say nothing about long distance.
Hey, you're not going to be like this guy Slim, are you, Earl? I do the guy a favor and he gets himself all jammed up.
Jack.
What's the matter? I didn't do him a favor?
If you call making some dough off a guy a favor.
How much could I make? He wouldn't give me more than 20 for the gun.
Oh, let's talk about something else.
Yeah, room for me, for instance.
Hey, maybe we can get him Slim's room. Slim's leaving for Arizona.
Well, I don't know where Slim's staying.
Ah, come on, Vicky. Don't kid your Uncle Jack. You've been seeing Slim.
I don't know where he lives. What do you want from me?
That ain't the way I heard it.
I don't care how you heard it.
Look, look, this ain't getting me any place.
The guy's hot around town, Earl. He's got a deal out in Arizona. He wants to get out as quick as he can. If she'll open up and tell me where he is, I'll fix it.
I told you, I don't know.
Okay, I can't sit around all night with a suitcase.
Then I can't do you no good. If I could, I would. I can't.
What do you say we all take a ride downtown?
I can't go nowheres. I don't get off for another hour. And what am I doing in your troubles anyway? Find your own room.
Oh, you don't get it, Vicky. This is a pinch. I'm a police officer.
What?
I don't want any disturbance. Come on, both of you.
Listen, I didn't do nothing.
What do you want me for? I'm as innocent as a newborn babe.
Let's just go downtown. We'll get it all straightened out.
Straighten it out.
Captain, I'll put away for the night.
Well, I think they've told us everything they know.
Yes, yeah, so do I.
Sit down, Earl.
Thanks.
It was a nice piece of work.
Yeah, a lot of good it does. After I covered all those joints to find him. All I know him by is Slim.
Yeah.
I don't know where he lives. Might be headed for Arizona any minute.
I wonder what this guy has in Arizona.
I don't know, but whatever it is, Captain, he sure wants to get to it.
Yes. He knows we'll have a tough time getting out of this town. Earl?
Yes, Captain?
I think I'll have a policewoman assigned to this case.
Helen Branch?
Didn't she tell you she'd like to do something?
She practically begged to help.
Okay, get her on the phone. Maybe there is something she can do.
What's that, Captain?
This Slim, whoever he is, wants to get to Arizona. He knows we've got a good idea of what he looks like. He knows we've got the railroad stations and the buses watched. He's read about the roadblocks. Chances are he's too scared to step out of his room.
Yeah, but what's that got to do with Helen Branch?
He gets the papers, for sure. And holed up in that room, he probably reads every word. If you were wanted for killing a policeman, you were trying to get to Arizona, what would you do if you read an ad in the paper that went something like this? Wanted, young man to drive new automobile to Arizona. Phone Mrs. Helen Branch, Central.
Hey, Captain, that's the ticket.
Okay, get hold of Helen and tell her what we've got in mind.
You betcha, Captain, right away.
What do you think, Sergeant? You think he didn't see the ad?
Maybe, Helen.
It was in this morning's paper. If he hasn't seen it by now... Oh, well, I guess it's too much to hope for.
And you know how it is in this business. You've got to wait and wait and then wait some more. And if nothing comes of the idea, we try something else.
And you think it's no use?
Well, we'll let the ad run tomorrow, too. If that...
That's it.
All right, now, take it easy.
I will.
If it's him, hand it like we planned.
All right.
Okay, pick it up.
Hello?
Hello, is this Mrs. Helen Branch?
Yes, talking.
You're the one who put the ad in this morning's Times?
Yes, that's right.
Well, I'll be glad to drive your car to Arizona. The ad didn't say, are you going along or is it going empty?
Well, I'm going along. I just didn't want to do all the driving.
When were you counting on leaving?
Tomorrow sometime.
Well, that's okay with me.
We'll have to exchange references, I suppose. Why don't you come over? I live at...
I can't make it just now.
Oh. Well, can we meet someplace?
Yeah, I guess we'll have to.
Do you want to give me your name and phone number?
Well, suppose we meet at 7 o'clock. Downtown on the corner of Main and Commerce. You know, in front of the drugstore.
But how'll I know you?
Well, what's your car look like?
Oh, it's a new Pontiac four-door. Green.
Pontiac four-door green. Okay. All right, then I'll see you. Main and Commerce, 7 o'clock. My name is Slim.
Hello? Hello, hello. He said his name was Slim.
Good work, Helen.
I'm to meet him on the corner of Main and Commerce, 7 o'clock, in front of the drugstore.
He'll be met, all right. Well, it's probably the captain. But you better answer it just to make sure.
Hello?
This is Captain Delaney, Helen. Would you let me talk to Sergeant Howard, please?
He's right here, Sergeant.
Thanks. Hello, Captain.
I heard the conversation. Looks like the boy.
How about it? Were they able to trace the call?
Well, it hasn't come through yet, but... Just a second. What was that? Okay, there's a squad of detectives down there. Have them take a look around. Earl?
Yeah?
Call keeper P station in the B section.
Well, that doesn't help much. He's probably gone by now.
Tell her she'll have to meet the killer tonight. But tell her not to worry. We'll have every man we can spare in the neighborhood.
Now back to Gangbusters. Here again is the narrator of tonight's case, Assistant United States Attorney Frederick H. Block.
In the darkness of that winter evening, the policewoman, Helen Branch, drove to the busy corner to keep her appointment with a killer. However, she was not entirely alone. The neighborhood swarmed with detectives on the alert for their man, and Sergeant Earl Howard was out of sight on the floor of the car, behind the seat, as she reached the rendezvous.
We're lucky. There's a parking space.
All right, pull in. Now turn off the motor.
I don't see him, Sergeant.
Well, if he's here, he'll take a little time to look around.
Just doesn't seem... Sergeant, there's a man. He's coming.
Does he fit the description?
I can't tell yet. He... Yes. Yes, he does.
Okay, don't talk to me anymore.
A lady.
Oh, just a second.
I'm Slim. You the lady that's going to Arizona?
Yes, I'm the one.
Well, move over. I'll get in. We can talk about it.
Well, suppose
all right, Slim.
Hey, what?
Police officer, don't move.
Now, look out.
Come behind you, Slim. Take it easy.
Yeah, well, I ain't...
Watch him!
Hold you. Don't...
Oh. Good. That ought to hold him, Captain.
Take care of this guy, man.
All right.
Come on, you. Get on.
Nice work, Ellen.
Thanks, Captain.
All right, man. Let's get him in.
That, Gangbusters listeners, was exactly how this killer was apprehended. He was tried for the crime of first-degree murder and sentenced to death. The man who sold him the gun, an almost equal menace to society, is now serving a life term as an habitual criminal.
Well, thank you, Assistant United States Attorney Frederick H. Block, for this enlightening case history. And Gangbusters, congratulations to all the detectives who participated in the investigation and to the brave police woman who was of such great assistance in trapping this murderer. Tonight's case was dramatized by Stanley Niss and directed by William Sweets, with Miss Leslie Woods and Chuck Webster in leading roles. Don Gardner speaking. Gangbusters is a Phillips H. Lord production.
Gangbusters on Tuned 2 yesterday from December 18th, 1948 on ABC. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for listening.